Hello there. Today is Tuesday, October 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, anger, blame, tweets, and more revelations as President Trump faces an impeachment inquiry.
I made a call. The call was perfect. When the whistleblower reported it, he made it sound terrible.
North Korea hasn't been testing weapons, but one expert says the reason may not be good. Also ahead, an Australian singer known worldwide is fighting stage 4 breast cancer. It's all on today's International Edition. Lawyers representing a whistleblower whose complaint has sparked an impeachment inquiry of President Donald Trump are stressing the need to protect the person's identity while the president says he deserves to meet his accuser. VOA White House correspondent Patsy Wittakuswara has details.
U.S. President Donald Trump continues to lash out against Democrats as they move forward on an impeachment inquiry, including the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, whom he suggested should be arrested for treason. Trump also said he's trying to find out about the whistleblower who drew attention to his July phone call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
The call was perfect. When the whistleblower reported it, he made it sound terrible. And then you had Adam Schiff, who, even worse, made up my words, which I think is just a horrible thing. I've never even seen a thing like that.
Last week at a closed event, Trump described the whistleblower as close to a spy. A person at the event provided the Los Angeles Times with a recording of his remarks.
You know what we used to do in the old days when we were smart, right? The spies and treason. We used to handle it a little differently than we do now.
Trump tweeted he deserves to meet his accuser and warned of big consequences. The whistleblower is expected to testify to lawmakers about his complaint against Trump's actions on Ukraine, but no date has been set. The law allows whistleblowers to report what they believe to be inappropriate behavior while protecting their identity and without fear of retaliation.
To try to penalize and criticize someone for following the law, because of accusations that the president has not followed the law, it is once again something that is beneath the office of president and something that Americans expect better of.
Meanwhile, Democrats continue to investigate the whistleblower's allegation that Trump sought Zelensky's help in digging up incriminating information about his political rival, former Vice President Joe Biden.
He is using his office in a way that violates the United States Constitution. Okay, he does not have the right to take money appropriated and threaten to withhold it for his personal political views.
Last week, Trump confirmed he withheld military aid from Ukraine, saying he did so over concerns that the U.S. was contributing more to the country than European powers. Republican allies insist it is the Democrats who are politically motivated.
Our job is to legislate, not to continue to investigate something in the back when you cannot find any reason to impeach this president.
Democrats have issued a subpoena to President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, over his interactions with Ukrainian officials as they prepare articles of impeachment or charges against the president. If the House decides to impeach, the Senate will vote. A minimum of 67 votes, including from 22 Republican senators, is needed to remove the president from office. Patsy Wittakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Well, the whistleblower is said to be someone in the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, or also known as CIA. Joining us to talk more about these unprecedented events that are unfolding is criminal defense attorney and former CIA officer Jack Rice. Jack, sum it all up for us.
A sitting president who decides to go to a foreign power seeking help against his political rival. A fundamental problem is that in the United States, a sitting president cannot go to a foreign power and ask for help against a political rival. That is simply a truth. And I think what you're going to see is that all sides agree with that concept, but this president doesn't seem to understand the distinction.
What does this mean for the Secretary of State and the Attorney General, both of whom have been somewhat implicated in some of these things?
There are two issues that I look at. The first one is the conspiracy question. And what I mean by that in the sense of criminal law. And what I mean is when somebody commits a crime and somebody helps them commit a crime. They can be guilty of conspiracy in terms of perpetuating that crime, helping that crime actually happen. There's a second question, and this is very, very important to look at over the coming months, and that's the question of obstruction, because who you're likely going to see subpoena here is not just Giuliani. You're going to see Barr before these three House committees. You're also going to see Pompeo before these three House committees and exactly what they knew and when they knew it. And if they deviate one iota, very real problem of their own, and that's over and above the problems that they have as attached to the president.
The president has been publicly saying that he wants to know who the whistleblower is. My understanding is that these people that come forward with potential allegations of criminal wrongdoing within our government are protected. Their identity is protected. But I would imagine the president could probably figure it out at some point. And what happens?
The problem here is the more people who know about the whistleblower, the more likely it is that you can't keep their identity secret. That's the problem. You put this individual in front of the House Intelligence Committee or any other committee, that means there's exponentially more people and exponentially more opportunities to leak that information. And this president wants that information desperately.
What can he do with it? I mean, wouldn't he be in even bigger trouble if he tried to retaliate against this person?
Remember, what this president has already done is they're already intimating that he's a traitor. Purpose is to blackball this person and to tear this person to the ground, to burn him to the ground, so everybody will try to, or at least he will try to get everybody to ignore what it is that this whistleblower is claiming. That's his effort. If we think about what this whistleblower has done, he has done everything that he is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
As a member of the intelligence community, his obligation, when he sees something of significance, he takes it to the Inspector General, the IG, which is what he did. The Inspector General will then make a determination on whether or not it's not just valid, but true concern, and that just needs to go to the Congress. That the IG will then take it to the Director of National Intelligence, who is then obligated to provide it to Congress. So in this case, the whistleblower did exactly as the law required, and even the Director of National Intelligence himself acknowledged that what the whistleblower did was exactly what he was supposed to do.
I'm sure our agencies within the intelligence community will do what they can to protect this person.
They will do their best, but again, the problem still is a question of getting that person before the members of the House. And when the members of the House learn of that person's identity, that means that there are many, many more will have the ability to leak that information. When I was working in the intelligence community, there was always a question of need to know. And nobody else would get it except for those who needed it. And the reason is that the more people who had access to something, the more likely that information, in this case, you're essentially providing all of this information to a bunch of politicians, some of whom are going to be under enormous pressure by the White House to leak it.
And how does all of this apply to Congressman Adam Schiff, who's pretty much spearheading the impeachment inquiry, and the president is calling him a traitor and saying that, you know, he should be removed and, you know, et cetera, et cetera?
It is extraordinary to see what this president is doing to a member of the House. I understand that he is a political rival. I get that. But again, the problem that I'm seeing is that the president is going after anybody and everybody who he sees as a political rival. However, I think that in the end, these are all diversions. These are all red herrings. The question isn't what Adam Schiff does. The real question is whether this president contacted the president of the Ukraine and asked him to help go after his political rival. That has nothing to do with Adam Schiff. That has nothing to do with the whistleblower's identity. And on top of that, we're also looking at what the Attorney General has done. And we're also looking at exactly what the Secretary of State has done to support that. These are huge questions, and these are questions that are really going to occupy the Beltway for months to come.
All right. That is criminal defense attorney and former CIA officer Jack Rice. We appreciate your perspective. Here are some of the stories we are following at VOAnews.com. White supremacists now lead a new wave of foreign fighters. Peru's president dissolves Congress amid anti-corruption push. San Francisco tour guide has been charged with carrying U.S. secrets to China. And poor women in Malawi are forced to trade sex for fish. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Former Trump National Security Advisor John Bolton spoke at the Center for Strategic and International Studies on Monday and said he disagreed with the president's strategy on North Korea. John Bolton said that despite Trump's assertions that he has stopped the brutal regime from weapons testing, it may not be a positive sign.
One very good, very troubling reason why there's no more testing of nuclear weapons for the moment or of long-range missiles is that North Korea has, in its judgment, for well or ill, finished testing and can produce nuclear warheads and long-range ballistic missiles. That's not an encouraging sign. That's a sign to be worried about.
Meanwhile, British-registered companies have facilitated North Korean efforts to evade international sanctions, according to an investigation by the London-based Royal United Services Institute. The report reveals how UK companies are being used to operate cargo ships smuggling coal out of North Korea. Henry Ridgewell has more.
Coal is North Korea's biggest export. Its income provides crucial funds for Pyongyang's nuclear and ballistic missile program, says the United Nations Security Council. And because of this, the industry is subject to United States, European Union, and United Nations sanctions. But a report from the Royal United Services Institute says British registered companies are playing a key role in bypassing those sanctions.
UK registered entities are being used as front companies and owners of vessels that are essentially involved in the illicit smuggling of North Korean coal, which is in contravention of United Nations Security Council resolutions.
The report details how North Korea is able to access US and international financial systems by using a complex network of global actors and company structures. One such network is Weihai World Shipping Freight, based in China. Six of the company's vessels are identified as being involved in the smuggling of North Korean coal. Of these, four vessels have been owned by companies registered in Britain. One vessel, the Lucky Star, loaded coal in North Korea as recently as January. Another, the Asia Bridge, is seen here at the Namp'o coal berth in North Korea in early August.
The networks behind these front companies are doing this for a number of reasons, including to obfuscate the origins of the network, which are already sanctioned by the UN Security Council. And they're also using the UK system as a sort of a veneer of respectability to lower the levels of scrutiny against their activities and the vessels involved in those activities.
McDonald says Britain must tighten oversight on the formation of companies because it is now too easy to create bogus firms.
It takes about 24 hours. It costs about £12. You need a director and a shareholder, an address within the UK, which can just be a secretariat address, which was used in this case as well. And the directors and shareholders don't actually have to be UK citizens or even have ever set foot in the United Kingdom.
In a statement, the British government told VOA that it works closely with law enforcement partners in the UK and beyond, where individuals or companies are suspected of illegal activities. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Well, Botswana has started offering free antiretroviral therapy to foreign sex workers following a decision to extend treatment to non-citizens. An estimated 30,000 foreigners living in Botswana are HIV positive, and most are sex workers. Until now, the Southern African nation was one of only a few countries that did not offer treatment to non-citizens. From Gaborone, Botswana, Mukdisi Dub has more.
35-year-old Mary Panda is an HIV-positive sex worker from Zambia. in deteriorating health. She has struggled to get treatment since she arrived in Botswana in 2018. But now she has a lifeline thanks to a Botswana government decision to offer the life-prolonging antiretroviral therapy to non-citizens.
I'm very happy because most of people, they'll be saved, especially those who were struggling from taking ARV back home. When they called us and they started helping us, we couldn't believe that it's really happening. We thought that they're just talking.
Banda says health officials have been helpful and monitor how sex workers respond to treatment.
After they've given us, they make sure that they do follow up to check if the tablets are okay, if there's nothing like side effects or whatever.
The Botswana government's move has been hailed by NGOs as a positive step in fighting against the epidemic.
As an organization, we are excited that the government of Botswana has made such a progressive move. Sexual relationships are indiscriminate. So that is to say, we cannot provide ARVs for one portion of a certain portion of people who live in the country and yet not provide the same treatment to another subset of the residents of the country.
The local sex workers organization Sisonge also welcomes the move.
We are very excited by this move. It's long overdue because we've been fighting for migrants to get ARVs. It's a milestone.
But for now, of the estimated 30,000 HIV-positive foreigners in Botswana, only 7,000 are getting treatment, according to the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, PEPFAR. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
And you are listening to International Edition. Back in a moment.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Voices. We're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, the DreamWorks animated adventure Abominable topped the weekend box office with an estimated $20.9 million haul in ticket sales, while the Renee Zellweger-led Judy Garland tale called Judy, about the life of American actress, singer, and dancer Judy Garland, who rose to international stardom, was a big draw, too. Joining us to talk about both of these films is Jeffrey K. Howard. He is the Vegas film critic. Jeff, let's start with the Judy Garland biopic. What did you think of it? This Judy Garland biopic is looking very interesting. What did you think?
You know, I have been a movie musical fan my entire life, especially Judy Garland. We know that Judy Garland is an institution. She's a national treasure, but she had a really troubled life. You know, she had trouble with drugs and alcohol and the pressures of being a movie star from a young age. And this new biopic, Judy, doesn't concentrate on her entire life, but only the last year of her life, where she did a series of concerts to raise some money in London. And towards the end of her life, she was going through a really bad divorce. She was trying to keep her children. She had no home. She lived in and out of hotels, and she was massively in debt, and she was addicted to pills. She was addicted to alcohol. She was an alcoholic. Very tragic situation for Judy Garland. Here comes Renee Zellweger, who plays Judy Garland, who's channeling Judy Garland. Not a hatchet job. I want to make that very clear. Yes, it exposes some of the dark elements of Judy Garland's final days of her life, but it also celebrates her considerably. It's more about the celebration about, I'm a mother. I love my children. I would do everything I could do to help them. And also, Renee Zellweger sings her own songs, but it's not only from the costumes, but also it's just an amazing biopic for anyone who's a fan of Judy Garland, who wants to know more about her. So it's about a very small part of her life, the final days of her life. I think she died at 47, which I can't believe that she just went too soon. It's not the greatest film, you know, in terms of the aspect of what the story's about, mm-hmm. but it's great to watch this incredible mm-hmm. icon and mm-hmm. what she meant to a lot of people. And I think come award season, Renee Zellweger is going to be definitely up there to watch.
So you think she did a pretty good job at portraying?
I think she did one of the most incredible performances of her career and of the year.
And then we've got a lighthearted animated film, Abominable.
Yes, this is from DreamWorks, and it's about a teenage girl who lives with her mother and grandmother in Hong Kong. And she's a dreamer, and she works all these different jobs so she can tour China. She wants to travel. She wants to see her country. So she walks dogs. She helps with delivery. She does all these different things. And she has this little cool little space on the top of her office building in Hong Kong where she goes up on the roof, and she has a little makeshift place where she can call her own. She goes up there one night and finds a Yeti, the Abominable Snowman, hiding out on the top of her apartment building. He escaped from a lab. There's an evil scientist who captured the Yeti, who wants to expose him to the world as a great scientific discovery. But she bonds with the Yeti and finds out that he wants to go back home to Everest. And so her and along with some of her friends go on this amazing adventure, this road trip, to return the Yeti to the rooftop of the world, to Mount Everest. And what's great about this movie is not only the animation and engaging stories, very magical, but also it's an all Chinese, Asian, American cast doing the voices, which is a first. So it's not only got Chinese mythology and Chinese culture in it, but it's got magic and it's got adventure. This is a real winner for all the family.
All right. Sounds like we've got a couple really very different but good movies to check out in the theaters. Thanks so much, Jeff.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It's Jeffrey K. Howard. You can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com. Well, English-born Australian singer-songwriter Olivia Newton-John has revealed that she is battling breast cancer for a third time. In a new CBS interview with Gail King, Newton-John says she is not going to listen to any statistics on her chances of survival.
I don't know what my time is, but I need to enjoy my life, so I'm going to eat a cookie if I want it, and I'm going to have a cup of tea if I want it, and if I want to have a little bit of wine, I'm going to do that, because the joy of life and everyday living has to be a part of that healing process as well. Prognosis, I don't discuss prognosis, because that's, if they give you, in my opinion, if they give you a percentage or, you know, this many women get this and they live this long, you can create that and make it happen. It's almost like, I think I know what the statistics are, but I put them away, but I'm gonna live longer than that. It's a decision how you choose to feel about something. So I've chosen that path. I'm happy, I'm lucky, I'm grateful. I have much to live for, and I intend to.
Well, Olivia Newton-John was first diagnosed with the disease in 1992 when she was just 43 years old. She is now 71. Well, that is going to do it for today's international edition, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day. Bring all your dreams alive.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Gone are the days when a government agency like the United States Agency for International Development could only assist the developing world by sending material assistance like food and medicine, or by providing expertise in the form of doctors and teachers. In recent years, three quiet revolutions have taken place, which reshape how we approach development, said USAID Administrator Mark Green at the 2019 Concordia Annual Summit in New York. The first is the technological revolution. For example, with mobile phones now widely available, USAID uses them to provide access to microfinance, track and treat diseases, help with election monitoring, and even boost crop production. The second revolution, he said, is no less dramatic. When USAID first began, about $3 out of every $4 that went from America to the developing world was government money. These days, that number is less than $1 out of every $10. And it's not because government has backed off or backed down, Mr. Green noted. It's because private resources have raced ahead. Philanthropy, remittances, but more than anything else, commerce and investment. The third revolution is the most exciting in terms of the potential for long-term sustainable development, declared Administrator Green. Agencies like USAID are co-financing, co-designing, and co-creating with private enterprise, the engine that generates real and lasting opportunities, particularly for young people around the world. He pointed to the example of USAID's collaboration with UBS Optimus Foundation to try to establish 400 health centers in the state of Rajasthan, India, to meet the highest quality standards. The investment bank UBS fronts the capital, and USAID works with partners to provide the training and expertise to meet the standards. When and if the standards succeed in meeting them, USAID repays the initial investors. Administrator Green describes the venture as one of several that provide public benefit, enterprise-powered results. There are so many ways in which the interests of private enterprise, which seeks to create sustainable markets, lines up very well with our mission of lifting lives, of tackling poverty, and creating stability and prosperity, Mr. Green said. So we work together to try to design, using the best capacities of each to produce those outcomes. USAID Administrator Green said that when new technology, private enterprise embracing emerging markets, and a government agency interested in real collaboration are put together, the future is enterprise-driven, and the sky's the limit.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is V.